DACA students. Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live on the radio at 9. Also, never miss a show. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, Hispanic Americans speak out about DACA and their annual Leadership Awards banquet in Jacksonville this week. What are your thoughts about the dreamers in this country? Give us a call, 549-2937. Then later, it's a new feature on the show, Real Talk. African-American voices have their say on all that infighting at Jacksonville City Hall. Plus, our own Judy Wells on cruises steaming out of Jacksport this spring. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, something of a reprieve for the nation's dreamers, as they're called. The Supreme Court Monday rejected a request from the Trump administration to speed up the legal fight over protections for undocumented immigrants who came to the U.S. as children. That ruling, after President Trump decided last year to end the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, program. As the matter is now expected to go back to an appeals court, the White House says it will continue to defend terminating the DACA program. But here's the question everyone's wondering now. Where does that leave the 900,000 or so young adults who have come to be known as dreamers, including thousands right here in Florida? As all of this is playing out, right now here in the city, the mayor's Hispanic American Leadership Awards are set for this Friday night at Jacksonville City Hall, honoring local leading lights in the Jacksonville Hispanic community. Mario DeCunto is chair of the mayor's Hispanic American Advisory Board, and he joins us now with his thoughts on all of this. Mario, always good to see you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. And here's our question to callers. As the Supreme Court puts another pause on ending the DACA program, that's Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, what are your questions and comments? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online and send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And we always welcome your comments as well on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Now, Mario, in a moment, we'll talk about the big awards Friday night at City Hall. But first, let's talk about this ruling coming down Monday from the Supreme Court. They've kicked it back down to an appeals court, and it's seen as something of a mixed bag for the dreamers. People who received work permits and protection from deportation through DACA, it looks as though they likely will be able to keep renewing their participation in the program, at least for now. That seems to be a reprieve for these young people. Your reaction?
Oh, thank goodness. I mean, all I hear from, our local DACA recipients is they're living constantly on edge. They don't know whether to invest in buying new homes, in, establishing businesses. These children, well, some of them already adults are, they're paying for school out of pocket. They don't qualify for loans. They're very odd. They look like you and me, but they don't have a lot of the rights that standard citizens have. So these folks are, they're working hard full time. They're paying for school out of pocket. They're not enjoying a lot of the benefits that we have, but yet they're just grateful to be here. They were brought with, no choice of their own, and somehow were able to make a life for themselves. So, we appreciate them and their patience with our legal system, and hopefully things work out well for everybody. Because 800,000, 900,000 people, that's a big part of our country's population. And, the fact that they work so hard, and they also have to fulfill all of these different, mandates. They have to be able to have a clear record. They have to be involved in some kind of work, involved in school. They have to be doing something all the time, improving it.
This is a group of young adults who were brought here as children illegally. They had no say in being brought to this country, of course, though, and there is strong bipartisan support for them having a path to citizenship. At the same time, those that take a harder line on immigration are calling for things like increased border security and just a harder line on illegal immigration more broadly. What would you say to those who are, they support the Dreamers, but they like the president's stance on immigration in the macro, in general?
Well, to tell you the truth, I'll prefer that person because that makes sense. No one is for illegal immigration. No one wants folks to be undocumented. The large businesses in Florida that require, low-income work in the fields, they prefer to have a program where they could have people working in their fields, picking our fruits and vegetables. That's such a big part of our economy in Florida. What would happen if all of a sudden they would have to start paying people what they deserve? I mean, our fruits and vegetables would go through the roof. We would need to have something that all of the companies and, these corporations can afford, and that these people can also be able to live and enjoy some of the rights that just everyday folks get to enjoy as they work hard.
It's 549-2937. We'll go to your calls in a moment as the Supreme Court declines to hear the DACA case, sends it back to an appeals court, a blow to the Trump administration. How about this, Mario? A coalition of nearly two dozen activist groups based here in Florida has issued a travel warning telling people not to visit Florida. Florida is the state that saw the biggest jump in ICE apprehensions last year, Immigration and Customs, telling people to take extra care when traveling through Florida. And that, of course, has to do with ICE's crackdown on illegal immigration. What about this? A travel warning now for Florida.
I believe that just because, the attorney that you invited to speak today, unfortunately wasn't able to be here just because she had a meeting with our, with ICE here locally. And she has expressed that there is an increase in apprehensions of folks that, had agreements with immigration officers. These folks were checking in. They were doing what they were supposed to do. And all of a sudden now they're checking in and they're getting handcuffed. I guess it's just feels like they're going back a little bit on their word.
Now, you chair Mayor Curry's Hispanic American Advisory Board here in Jacksonville. There is a vibrant Hispanic community here in Northeast Florida, certainly not as large as South Florida's, but growing. And as you prepare for a big event Friday night, you're honoring leadership in the community. So what's it like for you to be, you're honoring leadership success as this really, I would think, anxiety-producing legal battle is playing out for members of the community? That's got to be an interesting place to be, I would think.
Well, you're right.
To say the least.
Yeah, it is. It is interesting. And I think a lot of people do get those two things. But the truth is that, the awards that we give out, you have to have had some immediate Hispanic heritage. So your parent or your grandparent had to have been born in one of these countries. And so, of course, all of these folks are citizens. It would be quite awkward if we did have someone nominated as an undocumented person. But fortunately, all of our recipients are citizens. And there's a long, strong heritage of folks that we do need to honor just because it is... There is a lot going on in the community, and we need to highlight the positive things that are happening. We want to provide that to our local government, and we've gotten the support of the mayor, and we've gotten the support of City Hall and our city council people, who we hope will also make it tonight. We're very proud of the eight recipients, and if you like, I can mention
sure,
them.
Let's hear who they are.
Okay, so... In the field of arts and culture, we have Derby Ulio. In the field of business, we have Jorge Lopez of iHeartMedia. In education, we have Dr. Lee Larise at UNF, Director of School of Nursing. For our faith-based community, we have Dr. Ilya Vivoni. And for our health division, we have Dr. Renee Pulido of EMED. And for our lifetime, sorry, we'll leave lifetime for the last one, we have public service, Ivan Pena with JSO. And we have a new category that I'm very proud of including this year. We have for the disabled community and their work with our disabled folks, we have Jose Morales. And we also have for our lifetime achievement, Ed Perez, who was one of our former chairs of MAHAB.
Congrats to them all. And as we talk a little bit more about this Friday night's Hispanic Leadership Awards at City Hall, we'll go to your calls as well in just a moment. The number to join the show, what do you think about this latest reprieve for the end of the DACA program? The number to join us, 549-2937. Now, a minute ago, you said in order for people to be honored Friday night, they have to be citizens. And have
not necessarily have to be citizens, but they have to be living in Jacksonville for a couple of years.
Okay.
And they have to have had a parent or a grandparent at least, or themselves being born abroad.
I see.
Yes.
Before we went on the air this morning, you were telling me a little bit about your family history. Can you share that story with our listeners, Mario?
Sure. I think it came up because we were talking about how we have a history with DACA. We have a history of our country blaming a lot of immigrants for what's going on, especially even children. My grandmother, during the Depression, you know, was growing up in Arizona. She was born there, and you know, my great grandfather had a general store in Arizona, and my grandmother there, you know, raised all of, you know, my grandmother and all of her siblings, and there was an anti-Hispanic sentiment going on during that time because of the downfall of the market. A lot of people were blaming immigrants for a lot of the problems that were going on. And if you look different and you were from a different background, you were targeted. And unfortunately, the repatriation sort of movement that occurred with a presidential candidate at the time had brought it up. And even though the federal government later, that person never got elected, but even though the federal government sort of backed off, but the local governments in a lot of these states where there were Mexican immigrants, they did follow through with that movement. And she was forced to move back to Mexico with her family. My grandfather lost his store, pennies to the dollar, and while his neighbors just watched him, you know, leave, and they didn't have a choice.
This Mexican repatriation that happened during the Depression, it's my understanding this affected up to 2 million people, 60% of whom were U.S. citizens.
That's correct.
And so history shows that whether it's in this country or any country, when there's an economic downturn or fears about ethnic and social change, ethnic minorities often tend to be targeted. You can look at the Japanese internment during World War II as another example. There are many examples throughout history. And so as you tell your family's story of how they were deported back to Mexico, even though, as you said, your grandmother was a U.S. citizen but was forced out of the country, what are the lessons that you would like people to draw from your family's experience?
Well, one of the things that I want people to realize is that despite all these things happening, it works on your pride. It works on how you feel as a person because you feel that you're not accepted in the community. And one of the things that I really try to instill in others is that we have to feel proud that we have this heritage. If we speak Spanish with an accent, that's okay. You know, we have people that come into our board meetings and apologize for that. And I said, this is the one place where you never have to apologize for having an accent. I want you to feel comfortable speaking because you're an American citizen just like everybody else. And you have the right to express yourself like everybody else. And, you know, growing up, you know, we always felt ashamed that if we spoke Spanish in public. You know, my grandmother was always on the lookout because she had already grown up with that trauma, and it instilled in the rest of our family.
So your grandmother did eventually make her way back to the state, to the U.S.
Yes, actually, she met my grandfather in Mexico, and he was an engineer, and they moved back to the United. They moved to the United States. He was obviously not a citizen, and then he became active in local politics and became the mayor of Santa Fe Springs, California.
Yeah. Wow. And it's 549-2937 to join us. Here's a tweet from Lane. Why can't we give amnesty and also seal the border? How about that? Mario DeCunto.
Yeah, that's great. I agree. I don't think there's a problem with you know, having border security. I think that that's obviously, we want to be able to know who's coming into our country. And we want those folks to be welcomed and to be a functional part of society. And there's not a problem with that. But if you're going to seal immigration as well and not allow people to come in and work and play, and you know, then it feels like you're living in a concentration camp.
At the same time, for many Americans, the word amnesty, let's face it, it's a dirty word. And it has held up any kind of resolution in Congress to comprehensive immigration reform. How do we as a nation even try to get past this? And as DACA is now being kicked back to, it looks like, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, this will ostensibly give Congress some time to work out a fix, a solution. But for many years now, that has been politically impossible.
Yes, it is quite difficult. But to tell you the truth, Congress has a history of having difficulty really doing anything. So the fact that this is a problem is not really a surprise, just because it's so publicly known. But it is going to take a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of bipartisan partnership. And it is a very strong issue, and Republicans and Democrats both agree that something needs to be done in a positive way that's not going to harm, you know, the lives of 800,000, you know, 900,000 people who came here with no fault of their own. So.
Not all of whom, by the way, are Latino, Hispanic, the majority, but not all. And, you know, it's interesting here in Florida to contemplate this, because up here in North Florida, it's a little bit of a different picture, Mario. It's a smaller community than what you might see in Central or South Florida. But still, this is something that is an issue for this community. As you go around town and you talk about this, what's the dynamic like here, as opposed to, say, if you're down in South Florida? Because we're talking with about a much smaller community here in Jacksonville.
Yeah, it's funny, because in South Florida, there is no conflict. It's like clear as day what you need, what needs to be done. It is literally a, if you're not of Hispanic origin, you're a minority. And those who go to Miami, you know, they like to joke around. So the nice thing about Miami is that you can get to the United States from there.
Right.
And so it's very, very clear that something needs to be done. They don't see themselves as criminals. They don't see themselves as a hindrance on the community. They are the leaders in the community. They are, you know, investing millions of dollars into, you know, real estate business. I mean, everything there that has to do with any of the vibrance that's going on in Miami is due to the Hispanic community. So for them, it's like, what's the big deal? We're all just trying to do our job. We're just trying to work. We're just trying to have our life. Where's all this sanity, you know, sentiment coming from? So it is interesting, when there's a smaller community, you can target them. But when you go down into these smaller, bigger communities, it's like, who are we targeting? This is our community.
Mm-hmm. And how did you end up in Jacksonville, by the way?
Well, that's an interesting story. When I moved back, because I moved back and forth from Argentina growing up, and because my father's from Argentina and my mother's of Mexican heritage. And I moved back here, and I met my future wife as she was finishing up school in California. And little did I know, she was from Jacksonville. So, you know, she told me, well, one day she wanted to move back to Florida. So she got me to move back to Florida by saying, let's go to Miami, because I had a best friend there. Okay, great. We moved back to Miami, and then we realized that Miami was just really nuts. Even though I love all my Hispanic people, but the city is just growing. It's very, you know, moving quick, and we wanted a slower pace. So we found ourselves visiting Jacksonville, of course, like every weekend. And we said, we love it. And the house prices were much more affordable, and we love it. So, you know, we're raising our two children here now. So we're very excited.
And with all of that said, the Big Bash is Friday night. Can people be part of it?
Yes. It's an open event. All we ask is that people who would like to attend email us at mayhab@coj.net, and I'll spell that. It's M as in Mary, H, A as in apple, A as in apple, B as in boy. So that's mhaab@coj.net. And just let us know that you're planning on attending Friday's event with the names of the participants. And I just wanted to warn everybody, I was in email this morning that the library is actually having an event, which is next door to City Hall. They're expecting about 700 people. So parking, if you just get there a little bit early, the event starts at 6. If you get there a little early, it should be fine. And parking is free after 6. So if you'll only have to pay a little bit of parking, and then, you know, the rest of the night will be free.
Good advice. He's Mario DiCunto, chair of the Mayor's Hispanic American Advisory Board. Their leadership awards are Friday night at City Hall. Mario, as always, great to see you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
Much more still ahead later on the show. It's our own Judy Wells, and she stops by with a few tips for taking a cruise right out of Jacksport this spring and summer. But up next, we're going to debut a new segment on the program, Real Talk, from African-American leaders in the city on all that drama at City Hall. Back in a moment.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Personal Injury and Wrongful Death Law Firm. Highway, hospital, home, work, where negligence causes injury or death makes a difference in the law that applies and in the result. More at waynehogan.law.
The Chartrand Foundation is proud to support the Jacksonville Public Education Fund's efforts to acknowledge and recognize Duval County teachers. To learn more about JPEF's teacher recognition programs, jaxpef.org.
WJCT and the Florida Theater present Wild Kretz live on stage at the Florida Theater March 4th at 1 p.m. Watch the Kret brothers bring their creature adventure fun from the popular PBS Kids series to life on stage. Tickets available at floridatheater.com.
Irene Robinson loves Chicago.
My heart is here.
And she loves young people.
I vowed that I would fight for all children at all schools.
And that love burned with ferocity when the city closed 50 schools at once. What happened when Irene put up a fight? On the next Reveal.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
So I walk in the bookstore, and sitting at the counter in this metaphysical bookstore is what I really can only describe him as, Satan's valet.
Join us for more True Stories Told Live, a Michigan special. Fortune tellers, autism, seminary school, and a factory fire. That's on the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Jazz Night in America, Christian Scott Atunde Ajima. We're in his hometown, New Orleans, digging into what he calls stretch music. breaking boundaries, challenging traditions.
The actual tradition in this music is to continue to search for new ways of expression. It's transient, it's ever growing.
That's on the next Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, in recent weeks, drama at Jacksonville City Hall has gotten a lot of attention, in particular the infighting between Mayor Lenny Curry and City Council President Anna Broche. Now, the backstory to that has been the block voting from African-American members on the council from the city's northwest side that were critical in handing Broche the council presidency. Right now, though, some African-Americans are questioning whether that power base has missed opportunities for their districts. And what does all this mean for leadership in the city? This morning, we debut a new segment on the show looking at those questions. Real talk from African-American leaders around the city. It's led by our own regular contributor and board member, Charles Griggs, as he welcomes public safety analyst and former JSO spokesman Ken Jefferson, attorney Rhonda Peoples-Waters, and meteorologist Steve Smith. Take a listen.
So if you've been following local news, you've probably noticed a lot of activity between the Jacksonville City Council and the mayor's office. Many can trace some of the recent drama back to the election of Anna Lopez Broche as council president. This was an effort that could not have been accomplished without the block support of Northwest Jacksonville District Council members. Those council members include Reggie Gaffney, District 7, Katrina Brown, District 8, Garrett Dennis, District 9, and Reggie Brown, District 10. At the time, it seemed like a good move for the four Northwest Council members to align themselves with the new council president. However, some might argue that the opportunity for progress on the north side has been squandered by the inability to agree on policies and projects of significance. Secondly, as you may recall, Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry had lunch recently with three of the four district city council members and at-large city council member Sam Newby, who were touting the mayor's support for their districts on the north and west sides of town. While District 9 Councilmember Garrett Dennis said he wasn't invited to the event, which was held in his council district. What does this mean for leadership in Jacksonville? Rhonda, can you talk a little bit about what kind of impact this has on the council members' relationships with the mayor, and what does that mean to our community?
Well, I certainly think that it's quite telling. Just from my personal perspective, it was somewhat disappointing when we recognized that we have four African-American council members who are serving on the finance committee, which is obviously a first. And that's powerful because you have four out of seven who are serving on this membership or committee. I would just tell you that I think that the issues and strategies could have been more focused to maybe accomplish something that was unique and would have been able to markedly benefit the minority community. And that's what I would have liked to have seen come about. So I do think that there definitely should have been more unification so that we could see a specific strategy and then see the outcome directly linked to the communities and areas where, you know, these members represented. So I think that it's just a message going forward that we have to re-strategize this to make sure that we are as powerful and as effective as possible. And you never want to show that type of disunification. And I think that that was evident based on what we saw come out from the Soul Food Bistro incident.
Yeah. So, Ken, do you think it was a failure of strategy? Some of those council members might argue, well, all of them might argue that there have been significant projects that have been accomplished as it relates to their relationship with the mayor's office and projects they were working on prior to this type of event being staged.
Mainly, the constituents feel that a lot of progress have been made in their various areas from those council people, and they are the ones that actually count because those are the ones that put you in office and have an expectation of results of various issues and things that's going on in their district and in their community. I count it all as modern-day politics. It's a political arena that they're still in, even though they're representing the government for and of and by the people. There's still a large amount of politics that goes into everything that a council member does, everything that the mayor's office does. It's all strategic. And at the end of the day, what are you doing to help me in my district is mm-hmm. what I'm concerned about. I'm not concerned about the fireworks as long as I'm getting results in my district. If my streets are tore up and my council person is taking care of that and he's got a beef with the mayor, that's his problem. Mm-hmm. But my streets are repaired.
Some might argue, Steve, that infrastructure projects are the norm. They should be those status quo projects. Those are things that should occur anyway. What do you think? What kind of expectations should we have on a district council member as it relates to transformational change?
Expectation, that's the critical thing, because, you know, I was looking at some research, and since 1967, the Northwest Quadrant seems to always be the one that gets the last of whatever is out there. So we've got a number of years of, I guess you could say, not getting enough. So I don't know if one person, two person, or three people can make an immediate turnaround, because there's a lot of work to do. And yes, there's some basic things. You need the roads. Yeah. You need sewers. You need crosswalks. You need so many infrastructural type things. Now that with the recent disagreement, bumping of heads with the mayor's office and certain people, I think that's just things that are going to happen. It may continue to happen, because I don't know if we've ever seen this dynamic of having this block, as it were. I think now is a good opportunity for people to sit down and map out a strategy. I kind of liken it to when President Obama first took office and the economy was in the tank, deep, deep, deep in the tank. Everybody wanted to see a plan. Everybody wanted to see us back on top financially, you know, in a year or so, and it's going to take more time than that. In the meantime, you've got other issues mm-hmm. that you have to deal with, and there's some of the bread and butter issues. All right, you're dealing with the street construction, which you know, just before it seems like almost before every mayor's election, there's a number of Mayor Ed used to say this. There's a number of bulldozers out on the streets doing stuff, and then after the election, activity kind of goes up in the air. But you've got to have a safe street, Ken, and I know you would go along with that. But now, not directly involved in the city's purview, but along with the safe streets, you've also got to have good schools to go with that, so you're attracting people to the community. So there's a number of things that have to happen. Mm-hmm. And so where do you begin? Do you start with the streets? Do you start with crime? Do you start with trying to generate more business development in the area? I mean, there's so many things to do, but you have to start somewhere. This is a start, and it's going to be a rough start.
Yeah, some of the history of the urban core dates back to consolidation, when a lot of these projects were sort of left on the table as it relates to unfulfilled promises. And so one of the projects that was on the list of those projects that have been deemed a success is the $30 million project between the JEA and the city to move forward with the septic tank removal and remediation. So that is one of those projects that dates back, you know, over a period of time. Okay. that's the sitting council members happen to call a success. You talk a little bit about transformational change. We do have public safety issues. We do have economic development issues that don't seem to be getting any traction. You know, you're talking about, you just mentioned, we're talking about infrastructure changes, but transformational changes are those things that turn the community around uh-huh. as it relates to business development, you know, income disparities, health disparities, and so forth. Rhonda, do you think that that there have been any gains in that area?
Well, I'm certain that some have occurred, but again, I go to, when you have that ability of block voting, and we saw the power of that to come about just from those four members using their block votes to vote in Anna Broche, who was not necessarily supposed to take that position. So I say that when you're talking about that type of transformational change, what unique can you bring about to District 7, 8, 9, and 10? Can we say came about from these members having that black that block voting on the finance committee? And I'll just tell you that I have not been as excited to see what has come about it, and am somewhat disappointed. But again, it's just strategy to make sure that we move forward in the right direction.
In 1996, Warren Jones was a compromise vote for the president of the Jacksonville City Council. And I think that was probably the last time we've seen significant legislation passed, because they worked on minority business legislation during that time to promote minority businesses. And that would probably have been the last time there was a significant piece of legislation that was, you know, dealing with economic development on behalf strictly to support the African-American community. Some people might argue that the time has come again to revisit that effort because of the disparities that are going on economic development-wise. Ken?
Charles, I may have somewhat of a bias because of my background, my law enforcement background, so public safety is at the top of my priority list, simply because poverty and health issues is a direct correlation to crime. When you address public safety in the proper way, things seem to fall in line.
But you are a former police officer, huh?
Because
some people might argue it's the other way around. If you build an infrastructure that helps a community thrive economically, then people tend to take better care of their communities, or they allow for more opportunities for things to grow in that area, such as parks and safe streets and so forth.
And I would challenge that argument by saying that people will still be poor.
Safety notwithstanding, jobs, jobs, jobs. Jobs impact safety. I'll put it this way. I think it was Mayor Payton in his first inaugural speech. He said, and this is not a direct, I'm paraphrasing.
Okay.
He said, "I'm not an expert on race relations and so forth, but this much I do know. When people have a job and a steady paycheck, a lot of the problems that seem to be out there either diminish or go away."
That was the point that was trying to make.
When you have a job and a steady paycheck, now you're thinking differently about things, and it also impacts how people react to the police and how the police react to you and how things are going on the street. Now that you have jobs, you're looking differently at, what's going on with my schools and my children and how they're being educated. And now everybody's thinking about future and a brighter future. And that's going to be part of that transformational change. So, yes, you do have to have the public safety, but you also have to look at, okay, what kind of jobs are the people in these communities getting? Now, it would be nice if there were more, institutions, businesses in those areas to promote jobs, because I know there's probably a lot of people that are working, that are proud that they're working, but they have to probably catch two or three buses to do it, and they're probably working two or three jobs, which are leading to other challenges in the community.
But we just had Amazon land on the north side, which has provided a significant amount of jobs, and people feel like, if you talk to the council members, they'll tell you that is going to make a difference in economic and development on the north side. But anything south of the 295 corridor within the Northwest District, you don't really see a whole lot of, talking about Lim Turner, Moncrief, you don't really see a lot of opportunity for real economic development there. Rhonda, do you think that, again, we're going to go back to leadership. What are our expectations of council members, district council members, when it comes to developing or instituting projects or initiatives or policies that are going to spur economic growth?
And that's where the true leadership is going to come into play, because we recognize that Amazon came and provided those thousands of jobs. But if persons aren't in positions to be able to get those jobs for whatever the various reasons are related to their felony convictions or whatever it is, then that's when we need that transformational leadership to come in and think outside of the box and provide opportunities for some of those potential employees outside of what may be the norm. And that may be helping them to get back into the workforce and reintegrating them. So definitely those are some of the financial means that as minority members, we're going to have to ask them to think about to address that we specifically need for this community.
I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there for now. And I want to thank
you all so much for this spirited but respectful conversation. Thanks Ken Jefferson, Rondo Peoples Waters, and Steve Smith. Thank you all so much for speaking with us. I'm Charles Griggs. Looking forward to the next time we come to you on Real Talk.
Thanks for that, Charles. Well, WJCT News Director Jessica Palumbo has been doing an exciting project here at the station for some time now. It's called Beyond the Core, where we get out of the city's urban core and out into various neighborhoods all over the listening area to hear what you want us to be focusing on. We've got another listening session coming up. Hey, Jessica, where are you headed next?
Yeah, Melissa, we are headed to Arlington next. So if you live in Arlington and you want your voice heard, we invite you to come out. It's going to be March 20th at JU. We don't have the exact time. It will be in the evening. So check WJCT.org, the Beyond the Core banner there, to get the exact time for this. March 20th at JU. And something new that we're providing at this session, this Arlington listening session, we'll have a sign language interpreter there. So the deaf and hard of hearing community are invited out to participate if you live in Arlington and you would like to come out, we will have an interpreter there. So that's pretty cool. Somebody heard about our sessions and offered her services for free. And that's the really cool thing about this project is as we do it, we keep hearing from people who reach out and say, hey, I want you to come to my neighborhood. Or I heard you're coming to the South Side. I have a place where you can have the next listening session. So it's really kept the ball rolling.
You've done Beyond the Core groups all over town, and you've gotten some interesting feedback, right?
Yes. The last session that we had was in the Newtown neighborhood. That was a really great session, a really engaged group of people who were very interested in having this conversation with us, because one of the things that they told us is we don't like the way that the media portrays our neighborhood. They focus on the negative rather than the positive. So we heard about a financial literacy center that is going in there at Edward Waters College. We heard about scholarships to Edward Waters College. That's a priority for outgoing president Nat Glover. And the Newtown neighborhood, this organization called the Vision Keepers specifically, are raising money for two students from the Newtown neighborhood to go to school there. Those are stories that we're working on right now. Another thing that we heard from the Newtown residents is that they didn't feel like there's enough investment in from the city in the neighborhood for things like a bike trail. They'd love to see a bike trail connecting them to downtown or to the south of the neighborhood. And Newtown, of course, is just to the west of downtown.
So this is your chance, if you live in Arlington, to be part of what we do here at 89.9. And give us some feedback about how you'd like to see us cover your community. It's Beyond the Core, as our news director, Jessica Palumbo, ventures across the Matthews Bridge and over to the JU campus the evening of March 20th. Just come on out and go to our website. We'll have something up on our website, hopefully later today, with some updated information about this so that you can come out to this free event and have a discussion with her about this.
And all of the Beyond the Core listening sessions are off the record. We do not record them. It's just a chance for us to listen to you and hear what you want the rest of the community to know about your neighborhood. So we hope to see you there.
That's again March 20th at JU in Arlington, Beyond the Core, as we get out and about across the First Coast. Jessica, thank you.
Thanks, Melissa.
Judy Wells is up next. If you're looking to take a cruise this spring, she has some tips for you. We'll be right back.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Personal Injury and Wrongful Death Law Firm. When people are hurt through no fault of their own, answering who, what, when, where, why, and how is critical to proving the truth. More at waynehogan.law.
The Chartrand Foundation is proud to support the Jacksonville Public Education Fund, powering the potential of our city's students and citizens. Learn more about how you can impact public education at jaxpef.org.
How fringe ideas about guns became a central message.
It's about fighting tyranny so people can revolt against the government in arms. That's become a more central theme of the NRA just recently.
The history and the evolution of the National Rifle Association. It's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
last talked to Senator Dick Durbin, he was trying to pass an immigration bill and struggling to work with the White House.
I've talked to this president within the last few weeks on days when I thought, good, we've got a path to getting this done and done the right way. Then 2 days later, it completely blew up in my face.
That effort failed. Now we ask the senator, where does DACA go from here? This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Since the Columbine massacre, most mass shootings have been committed by men younger than 30. Why is that? One theory, a warped and toxic sense of masculinity, is making some young men feel entitled to kill. What's really going on, and how might knowing that help us prevent mass shootings? Next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, if you've never taken a cruise but always maybe thought about doing it, this spring is a good time to take one right out of Jacksport. Guess who has? You know the answer. Our own Judy Wells. She's been everywhere, and she just happens to be home long enough to stop by Studio 5 with some tips for traveling the high seas. Hey, Judy.
Good morning. Good morning. And if no one has taken anyone out there has never taken a tour, the Carnival cruises out of Jacksonville are great starter tours.
Really?
They are. The price, you cannot beat it.
Yes.
You don't have a lot of balconies because the bigger ships with balconies can't get under the bridge.
Excuse me, Judy. I'm sorry. I think you're wanted on the Lido deck.
Oh,
do you hear the music?
Always.
I think Isaac is calling for you with a Mai Tai, I believe.
Actually, I believe it's Isaac
that wanted to see you.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, it was LaToya and her Bloody Marys that kept us occupied.
Nice.
She makes a great one.
I bet you had fun.
We did. I went with a friend. We celebrated our birthday month.
Nice.
And both of us had been to Nassau and Freeport before. So we got out and walked around in both ports, but you know, there wasn't a rush of things to see, and we played canasta and red with things we never get
they
time to do.
They still do that.
Home.
They still play canasta on
we
cruise
do.
Ships.
We
oh,
do.
You guys do.
We
okay,
did. We did. We gambled a little. We went to the comedian shows, and we talked to people. And the amazing thing to me was how many people from out of state, way out of state, were on that cruise.
Now here's my thing with cruises. I've taken two, and both times, every night you're on the ship, you're having dinner with the same little group of people.
Not necessarily.
That's how it was when I did it.
Well, they have open seating now.
Do they?
For meals.
Okay, that's a good change.
Because it's a very good
because
change.
If you're with the same people every night, that can get a little old.
It gets old. But with the most of the cruise lines now offer open seating.
Okay.
And so you sit by yourselves, you sit with other people, you take your choice. And the Carnival ships out of Jacksonville don't have many fancy balconies, but by the same token, you get a larger stateroom.
Did
They're
you do that?
185 square feet.
Did you do that?
We did that. We did not. We had an ocean view, which meant a window.
You're big pimping, Judy Wells. You were rolling in style on the Carnival cruise line, weren't you?
Oh, we were. Yes. We had a great time. And Carnival, unlike many other lines, will allow you to bring a fifth of unopened alcohol, a six-pack of sodas or mixers if you want.
You brought all of that?
Of course we did.
So you brought a lot of contraband onto this ship.
Wasn't contraband.
It's all legal.
It was all legal. And it cuts the cost down if you like your cocktail at night and a glass of wine with dinner.
Which I know you do.
Of course we do. We're on vacation. We don't get that very often.
Now let me think about this here. So there are six ships, five Carnival lines that come out of Jacksport.
No, that have come out of Jacksport.
That have come out
we
of Jacksport.
We have one ship in at a time.
Okay.
And the current one, the Elation, is being will be replaced in the fall by the Ecstasy. And they move them around so that you don't get bored by having the same ship.
Okay.
You want a different look. And Carnival in the past years used to have this huge over-the-top Las Vegas glitzy look.
And they've toned that down.
They've toned that down quite a bit, which is a blessing for me.
And isn't Carnival more for young families?
We were surprised at how few young – well, there were a lot of young families – But there were not a lot of us old folks on board. It used to be, you know, people, older people, retired. It was cheap weekend away. They got to dance and all the rest, and all the food was taken care of for them. And if you have a travel agent who books cruises a lot, you can get a really good deal on Carnival because they open up the last-minute rooms that are still vacant.
What are you looking at? What's a ballpark for a quick cruise like what you did?
I think it starts at about, I think our cabin started at $387 for the four-day cruise.
And that's everything. That includes everything.
Yeah. It includes food. It does not include your excursions. It doesn't include the drinks you buy on board or the fancy coffees. But there is no, you know, upcharge dining room. And you have a choice of venues at
which
to eat.
And you're eating about 22 times a day on these cruises. Every time you turn around, they're throwing food at you.
This did not happen. It's there.
Really?
It is there. It's a good thing we did not discover that the self-serve soft ice cream was open 24 hours a day.
Exactly.
In Tiffany's dining room.
you roll down the gangplank having gained 20 pounds when you go on one of these.
Well, we didn't. We're modest eaters and modest spenders.
Very nice. You have discipline.
But the beauty of it is you're going out of Jacksonville. You go past the shipyards. You're seeing it from a different angle. And all these people from all around the country are seeing the beauties of Jacksonville.
Right. They come from all over to disembark from Jacksonville.
They come over. They spend the night. Now, they may not go downtown, but they're here and they're spending their money. And they're having a wonderful time. And so they have very good thoughts about Jacksonville. The only problems we had coming and going were the sea fog, which happens about once or twice a year. And we hit the sea fog, so we were late getting out and we were late getting in. And I felt sorry for those people who had early flights. Don't ever get an early flight off a cruise ship.
Good advice. Always good travel advice from Judy. Go to wellsworld.net for more. Where are you headed next?
China.
Of course you are. You're always going somewhere fabulous.
Well,
I'm so jealous of you.
This is the thing. When you don't get to plan your itineraries, they're planned for you. And as a travel writer many times, and I have been three times. And this is the first time I've had a chance to see the Terracotta Warriors, and I'm thrilled.
Of course you are. This is the fabulous life you lead. I can't wait to hear about it. We'll hear about it when she gets back. In the meantime, that's our show. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. 1A's up next. We'll be back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.